This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If jurors weren't already suspicious about Donna Adelson, all they have to do was follow the money. Doesn't take a forensic accountant to see the red flags flying here, although they did bring one in, and we found the red flags flying. Donna Adelson signed 44 checks to Catherine McBonough, an alleged murder-for-hire middlewoman who, by her own admission, never worked a day at the Adelson Institute. Not a receptionist, not a hygienist, not even a temp. Yet those paychecks kept rolling in long after Dan Markell was murdered, right up until the FBI showed up for their undercover sting on Donna, and then poof! Donna's money trail ends. These aren't theoretical connections. They are cold, hard checks. And Donna's name right there on the signature line. One after another. Nearly 2 years of payments, totaling thousands, going to someone the prosecution says was part of the hit team. And what's worse, the defense can't even lean on plausible deniability. These weren't auto pay transfers or blind ledger entries. Donna personally signed them. The prosecution wants jurors to connect the dots between the timing of the murder, the checks, and Donna's sudden stop in payments the moment the heat turned up. Isn't just suspicious, it's strategy. Consciousness of guilt isn't always a confession. Sometimes it's a very deliberate pause in payroll. Joining me to continue the conversation, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. When you got a defendant's signature on this kind of financial paper trail, paying someone already convicted for playing a role in the murder, what do prosecutors need to do to turn that from weird coincidence into evidence beyond a reasonable doubt? What does the defense even have left to argue? That Donna was just a generous boss, an incompetent boss, a grandma who didn't read the ledger? Let's get into it.
That paper trail is, I think, perhaps the most damning part of this case against Donna Adelson, because how do you explain that away, that this person didn't work for the Adelson Institute, this exalted dentistry empire? You know, she wasn't providing any services for them. And so for what was she being paid? Well, the only connection of which we're aware is her role as an intermediary in this murder for hire plot. So it, like you said, doesn't take a lot to connect those dots. And I'm not sure how the defense is going to explain that away.
How do you think they were thinking that they would explain this away? Or do you think they just thought they weren't going to get caught?
You know, it's a little hard to say. I'm wondering if in closing argument, they're going to say something like, hey, this was Charlie's mistress at the time, and Charlie wanted us to take care of her. Donna wanted to do what her son wanted. And Donna was just trying to be like a nice mother. They had some money. And so let's take care of the mistress. You know, is that going to pass the smell test of this jury? I'm not so sure.
It sounds like an even worse plot than most Hallmark movies, you know, where like there's the cheating evil man, maybe Lifetime. We should go more Lifetime than Hallmark, you know, where it's like, oh, because it doesn't make any sense at all. It's not like it was like they were together and they're somehow like, well, we can get more of a write-off on the business if we have more people on payroll or something. They weren't even together through most of the time that she's getting paid. And especially the 2 year pattern, 44 checks, my God. And the timing, the checks stopping immediately after the FBI bump. How significant is that in terms of showcasing consciousness of guilt?
You know, the timing in this case is huge. There are a number of events. One is exactly what you just said, where, oh, now we learn that there is this very serious criminal investigation into a murder. Oh, let's stop paying the intermediary who helped us plot this. That's obviously problematic. And then Wendy Adelson, the sister, stopping talking to her mom, Donna Adelson, in 2023, right after the conviction of Charlie Adelson. And then lastly, the timing of Donna Adelson trying to skedaddle out of the country once things started to heat up. I think timing is a big part of this.
There's a lot of tea leaves to be read in this case. They're pretty obvious, but I mean, we do these things, we talk about these things on a regular basis. So they stand out to us like huge red flags, not red herrings. Do you think the jurors are going to buy the idea that Donna was just a bookkeeper and just, you know, well, another check came across the desk and Charlie said to sign it. I'm just doing that. I'm rubber stamping everything. They said she personally signed them. So it wasn't the person at the front desk with a, all right, stamp the name on. We're done. She's looking at these things. The Institute, not that big of an institute, enough where you're going to be looking at the checks. And if you're, you know, thousands of dollars are going out the door to a random human being, Charlie's ex-girlfriend, one would think that there might be a red flag. Will the jury buy it that she was just clueless?
Some very suspicious activity, no question. I think the defense is going to style it as, hey, this is a grandmother who was, you know, just processing financial stuff for this company. She wasn't intimately familiar with where everything was going. And hey, if you want to charge her with fraud or check fraud or wire fraud, something like that, do that. But that's not what they charged her with. And so I think the defense is going to style it in some fashion like that. But that paper trail is very problematic, and the jurors are going to have to look at that in a comprehensive view with all of the other evidence as well.
Yeah, I mean, in conjunction, the two are really strong. If you just had one over here, circumstantial, one over here, you got two colliding here. And when you weigh the paper trail against the live testimony, the live show that's being put on in front of us, is it actually stronger because it feels more objective because the two do seem to tie together so neatly, or does it need the testimony context for it to hit home?
I think the testimony part is really important because, like you said, these facts in isolation are not dispositive. They're not going to win the day. But when you bring everything together, in fact, the jury is going to be instructed that they have to review the evidence, the totality of evidence, not just one little piece in isolation and say, oh, that's not enough. This little piece, that's not enough. They've got to look at everything. That's going to be their duty as jurors back there. And when you take the witness testimony with the paper trail, and we're going to hear about wiretaps and other communications as well, things are beginning to mount against Donna Adelson.
There are cover-ups and there are sloppy, transparent, all caps kind of cover-ups. The kind that beg the question, did they really think that no one would notice? Because jurors aren't stupid. Well, at least we hope they aren't. You show them a woman on the payroll who admits she never worked there, getting tens of thousands of dollars in checks signed by the defendant herself, and then you tell them, don't read into it. So that's nothing. It's nothing. Well, good luck with that. Donna Adelson may not have kept her name off the burner phones, but she couldn't keep it off the checks, and that's where things get dangerous, because paper doesn't forget. Unlike Wendy, who suddenly can't remember a thing, the ledger remembers the dates, the names, the signatures. They're locked in. And when those details align perfectly with the timeline of a murder for hire conspiracy, well, that's the kind of thing that makes a jury lean forward and start taking notes. If the defense wants to argue this was just a kind gesture, Donna helping out her son's former mistress out of the goodness of her heart, it's going to be a tough sell, especially when the generosity conveniently stopped the moment the FBI showed up. That's not kindness. That's containment. Coming up next, it gets even stranger. We're not just talking money laundering. We're talking actual laundering, like throw the cash in the washing machine with Tide Pods laundering. You can't make this stuff up. Maybe you could if you're trying to wash away a murder. Let me know your thoughts in the comments section. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching us. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us on any podcast platform and on YouTube. YouTube is where your voice can be heard in the comments. So please do check us out there and press subscribe. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.